Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey, everybody, here we are.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Hello, Karen. We are back again for another Thursday night of creamy paranormal deliciousness. I hope everybody has their spoon as well as a bib.
Because it's also going to be some creamy paranormal drooling. That's what she said? No way. Hey, so Tanner has been taking Spanish. You know, he just started high school here last week, and he's taking a Spanish class. Mm-hmm. And he believes that the most important things he needs to learn in Spanish are your mom, and that's mm-hmm. what she said.
Yep.
So he's got those down. I told him that he needed to also learn your mother smells like cheese, because I'm just really sure that that's probably going to be something that at some point in his life he's going to need.
Probably. Or asking where the bathroom is, donde está el baño.
Do you know how to say your mother smells like cheese? Something.
I don't.
To madre something queso.
No, actually, I learned that from Encino Man.
Oh, well, you know, yeah. most of my Spanish that I know is really exciting Spanish. I can mm-hmm. I can swear.
Oh, of course. Yeah, so can I.
I can ask who farted. I know. So my son's Spanish teacher is going to love me, let me tell you.
My Spanish teacher passed me just to get me out of her class. She hated me so much.
Well, so wait, you actually took Spanish, and all you can come up with is donde es the...
El baño.
El baño.
I told you, I learned it from watching Encino Man.
Please. So, hey, I have a job. After 18 months of relative unemployment with a little bit of freelancing and a lot of stuff for the magazine and things like this radio show and stuff, I started actually working 40 hours a week on Monday.
How's that working out for you?
Well, if I sound a little brain fried, mm-hmm. that's going to be what it is. Oh, my God. You know, it's just writing, which is what I do. But,
yeah.
Oh, to do that when I just sort of felt like it occasionally, to mm-hmm. now sitting there for essentially what amounts to 8 hours a day writing. Ooh, holy cow. Yeah. Somebody in the chat room is actually speaking in Spanish, but I noticed that they didn't tell me about the cheese. I want to know how to say your mother smells like cheese. Okay, what were you going to say, Rick?
I was just going to say, you know, with my job, I've, you know, worked at the same place for 10 years now, and I feel like I should be paying them, because I go in, the kids are asleep. You know, for anybody who doesn't know, I work in a residential treatment facility, kind of like overnight counselor for kids who have behavioral and learning disorders and stuff like that. I should be paying them. I go in, I set up a TV and a DVD player, and I watch movies, or I write, or I listen to music. I mean, it is the greatest slacker job of all time.
You know, that's pretty nice, except that you have to stay up all night.
No, that's all right. I've been doing that for years. I mean, it's great. I have no problem with partying all night and sleeping all day. But, you know, it's a great job, and I love working with the kids, too. You know, when they're up and about and doing their thing, and, you know, unless they're acting like little jag loads, then, you know, but it's okay.
Right, right. Well, and it's good practice for the baby.
Absolutely.
Staying up all night, not the jag load part.
I've actually gotten really good at saying the word no.
Well, good. Good. And do you have different inflections with no?
No, not going to happen. Ain't working for me. This doesn't fly.
No, I was thinking more like, you know, how you can use the word dude in all sorts of ways. You know, dude. Dude.
You know, dude for like, you know, you like, dude, you just drank my last beer. Or dude, you know, you just jumped out of the closet and scared the hell out of me. Or dude, how could you sleep with my ex-girlfriend?
That's right. That's right. Perfect. Okay, here we go. You ready? Tu madre huele a queso.
Your mother smells like cheese. Thank you, Chad.
Does she? And Jenny, too, in the chat room. We got a few people who got it there for us. So. Tu madre huele a queso. I'm going to practice that. And although I can't say it to Tanner when he says your mom, because I'd be talking about myself, I guess, huh?
Absolutely.
That's what she said. That's what she said. So we have a new magazine that came out. It just came out the other day. And so, Cheryl, you want to pop on your mic and talk real quickly?
Hello, everybody.
That's Hello,
what she Cheryl. Said.
How's it going?
Good. We're gonna try and behave tonight. And I know last week when you were trying to talk about what was going to be in the magazine, Rick and I wouldn't shut the F up. I think we can do it tonight. What do you think, Rick?
You know what? Go for it. Who knows what'll happen?
Okay, well, let's give it a try.
First things first, I just have to give props to Rick for a rare Encino Man reference. So awesome.
Thank you. It's only one of the best Pauly Shore movies of all time.
Wait, it's the only good Pauly Shore movie, isn't it?
Actually, yeah. Son-in-Law was pretty lame in Biodome. I could have punched myself in the face after watching that one.
I didn't see Biodome, but I did see Son-in-Law, and I think I recall that there was actually a fairly funny scene with a tractor and some reference to Steven Tyler PJs that I enjoy, but you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I have to admit, I've actually gone to the theater to see Pauly Shore movies. One being Encino Man, and then do you remember the one called, oh my gosh, I just blanked on it. It wasn't Son-in-Law. Oh, In the Army Now. You guys see that one?
I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
When you went to see these movies, was your hair bigger than Pauly's?
Definitely.
Whoop. Hey, I had big 80s hair too. Rick, did you have big 80s hair? Did you have a mullet?
Oh my god. No, I didn't have a curly mullet, but I did have a slight mullet. I was kind of like, it was kind of like the baby M, so.
did you wear the mullet, the muscle tees?
No, I did not. However, I did wear the Iron Maiden t-shirt, so.
Nice.
Oh, dude, Iron Maiden, and what kind of car did you drive?
Chad would like
was
that.
Was it El Camino?
79 Cutlass Supreme.
Oh, well. Okay. So, Cheryl, let's talk about the magazine.
The magazine, yeah. We have a great issue online now. Everybody can read it for free at paranormalunderground.net, or you can buy it on MagCloud. It's an on-demand site. The issues, you can order one issue at a time or 20. It's up to you. But if you want to read it for free, go to paranormalunderground.net and log in, and you can read it at your leisure. We have...
We're on iPad.
What? Oh, and
it's
on
iPad, too.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
I said I was kidding.
It's on iPad, too. I totally forgot about that. We have Bill Murphy on the cover, and Bill joined us a few weeks ago on the radio show and talked about his paranormal investigation, as well as his new show on the Sci-Fi Channel, Fact or Faked, Paranormal Files.
And super nice guy.
He was awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Very nice guy, very knowledgeable, really interesting. Love to have him on again.
Because I didn't know who he was at the time, I was not in the slightest starstruck. Like I will be with our guest in 2 weeks. 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
3 weeks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And who might that be, Karen?
No, don't say it. It should be left as surprise for everybody.
Okay.
No, we're saying it. We're saying it. Come on. Give a hint. Talk like him. Go, Rick.
I can't do an Irish accent.
Oh, okay.
So there we go. It's out.
There's the hint.
Everybody
okay.
knows.
That's right. It's a well-known Irish ghost hunter who will be joining us.
Yay.
Yes. 2 weeks. And we're excited.
We are very excited. So as far as the September issue goes, we talked about a little bit last week, but we have an article from Sean B. on Alaskan abductions, and that relates to the movie a while back called The Fourth Kind. We have a story by Jill Stefko on vampires in Rhode Island. Kind of a cool, interesting article there. And then we have an article from Mr. Rick Hale himself on Williamsburg Hill, a famous haunted site, which is, you got to read that one. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And we have an article on an alien base underground in New Mexico.
That's right. I'm afraid of that one. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, you got to read that one. We have a bunch more, too. So I can't go into all of them now. But, we also talked with... in our author spotlight, Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman on their new book, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, written by Michelle Pillow, who's going to actually join us tonight. So that's kind of what we've got going.
You know, sorry, Karen.
I just said very cool. You can go now.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, my Jamie, my wife, she had the thing about seeing the number 11 mm-hmm. all the time. So that's kind of like the time prompt thing, right?
Isn't that it is, the 11-11?
It actually is 11-11.
Yeah.
That's the title of the book, 11-11.
Here's the thing about 11-11, and I don't really know anything about it other than that I know that some people sort of say 11-11 is, you know, significant, but... You know, I could just as easily look at my clock and have it be 9/11 and be freaked out because, you know, the terrorists are going to get me. So I don't know. I tend to things like that. I tend to really wonder about things like that. I read a book, oh gosh, here several years ago, and I can't even remember what it was called, but they kept making this big deal about all of these things happening at like 3:12 in the morning. And oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah. So yeah. Anyway, so no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I always love that whole, like, it's 3:00 and that means that's when the demons are out and, you know,
oh,
and
all what do that they stuff. Call that? What do they call that on Paranormal State?
The witching hour. And I don't watch Paranormal
dead
State.
Time. So. Dead time. Is that what they call it? Dead time? Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of hooey.
Yeah.
A little bit. I'm not sure that I believe in that, but it's really dramatic for television. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So, in a couple of minutes, we're going to take a break, and we're going to, when we come back, we're going to talk to people who have been on their very first ghost hunts in recent, you know, in the last couple of months.
Oh, and, God, as long as they don't say that they got the idea from watching a television show, then we'll be all good.
Well, no, I really like talking to people who have been out investigating for the first mm-hmm. time, because I just... It sort of reminds me of back when I was all fresh and new about ghosts, which wasn't that long ago. But, you know, mm-hmm. I like to watch people have their first experience that makes them start to think. That's a pretty cool thing to have happen.
Yeah.
So, oh, hey, before we go to break, I know what else. So I have big news.
Mm.
Big, 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 big news. Other than the job and stuff. So Tanner and Jim and I have actually joined up with Paranormal Team, and we are actually now part of Northwest Paranormal Investigation Agency. So, and
nice.
The BPIA, shout out, holla! They're in the chat room, and you have relatives listening tonight too. Is that right, Rick?
Yeah, I got my wife's aunt who might be listening tonight. She recently talked to her on the phone. She was experiencing something strange in their house, and you know, she asked me so about it. So I just said that this is what it could possibly be. I doubt very highly that it's anything paranormal. So
okay, so she's listening. So shout out mm-hmm. to Jamie's aunt. And who are you going to call when there's something strange in your neighborhood? Who are you going to call? Rick Hale!
Hi, Auntie Gina. How are you?
So, hey, let's go to break. And when we come back, the first person that we're going to be talking to is Teresa West, and she is going to be talking to us about her first experience as a ghost hunter, and it was at the granddaddy of them all, Waverly Hills. So we'll be back in just a minute.
See you in a bit.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Wow, that was a new one. I don't think I'd heard that one before.
Oh, my God.
So, hey, just before we get to our guests, I was going to ask you, Rick, I sent you, did you get a package from me?
Yes, I did. I got your package for your your book, Avalanche of Souls, and Our Spirits, rather. I'm sorry. And the documentary, Avalanche of Spirits. And Jamie and I, we both watched it last night. We thought it was great. You know, enjoyed it.
Well, what's funny is that when I promise you I'm going to do something, by God, I do it 2 months later, don't I?
2 months later, yes.
That's right. So, hey, let's not be rude. Let's go to our guests. So our first guest is someone who revealed to us over the break that she also had bigger hair than Pauly Shore back when Encino.
Sure did.
That's right. So we're talking with Teresa West, who went on the big paranormal underground investigation of Waverly, which was your very first. And you went, the big wolf, your husband went with you too, right?
We did. We had a grand old time.
That, you know, it's kind of amazing that you actually cut your teeth on a place like Waverly Hills.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's close to where I live. And then, you know, I found out through another rival website or forum that Chad was from Knoxville, and I was like, oh, hey, I have somebody here in town. Mm-hmm. So, and if it were
we have no rivals, Teresa. We are unrivaled.
A neighboring.
neighboring. We are unrivaled.
It was on Skiffy, okay?
Oh.
The one that shall not be named three times where all our heads will explode. found out Chad was from Tennessee, and if it weren't for his spearheading of this trip, I would never have thought to do it myself. But so that turned out to be my first big investigation.
Well, and you have always been by nature a skeptical believer. Would that be a good characterization for you?
A believer in like a residual type of haunting, really skeptical about demonic entities and on the evil side of it. I don't know where I draw the line, but I don't think that anything's going to come up and bite me in the butt, because somebody killed somebody on the property here.
Yeah.
But
having seen and heard things happen in the house that I grew up in and still live in, it was kind of interesting to actually go around where things interacted with me.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me, just for starters, let's talk about your early experiences before Waverly, when you were growing up in the house that you did.
Back in the 20s, not the 1920s, my 20s, when we would stay out late and go visiting places that young people did and come home when you didn't want to turn the lights on, wake mom up. Mm-hmm. I could walk from one side of my house into the hall in complete darkness and walk through a cold, misty type, like a fog. Mm-hmm. And I'd go, it's okay, I'm home, go to bed, And I actually woke up one time and there was a couple standing at the end of my bed staring at me. And that was pretty interesting. I told them I didn't think they lived here anymore and haven't seen them since. Mm-hmm. But now, Wade, the big wolf, he has since seen our lady visitor that walks around sometimes. He's seen her a couple of times. So,
wow.
I could listen to like 16 stair treads, something going up the steps. It's not the house creaking. It's not, settling. It's 16 footsteps going up 16 treads to the upstairs. It's
cool.
Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I got to tell you, I'm sorry that Big Wolf couldn't join you because you know I have a huge crush on your husband because of his voice.
I love your
husband.
He's actually not asleep yet. I may get him to make an entrance here in a minute.
Oh, you should have him come talk just because all of the girls in the chat room and all the girls listening will melt. I'm sorry. You live in Tennessee and I live in Washington, so we're safe and, we both have our own husbands, but I have the biggest crush on Teresa's husband. I also have a crush on Shannon Sylvia's husband. So, these things, they happen.
Well, it's just because he has a radio voice.
He does. He has an awesome radio voice. Okay, so let's talk Waverly.
Yes, tell us all about it, please.
Oh, it was awesome, guys. I'm telling you, the pictures that you see on television and online and books don't do it justice. I stopped out or stepped out of the car almost before it started rolling to take pictures of the backside of the building. It's like before the light went, it it just drew me. I was like, you're going to have to stop the car because I've got to get out. I got to take these pictures. And if anybody asks me a question in the chat room, by the way, I can't read and talk at the same time. So
no, we'll actually do the chat. We'll ask you the questions because we hardly look at the chat room either. So you're good.
Yeah, it's well, I hear the little dings in my background noise. But anyways, she gave us the big tour in like 15 minutes. So you do 5 floors of Waverly Hills in like speed reading, like Evelyn Wood speed tour through Waverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And you really don't get a chance to listen to everything that the guide says because you're looking around and going, okay, where are they? So when we broke up, we pretty well broke up with Liz and Sue, her friend Sue, that's E. Diaz, and went down through to the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sense, even though the hardwood's not on those pillars anymore, and even though it's all decorated up for Halloween, you just feel how grand it used to be in the days that it was open, because it was, you know, state of the art when it opened. So
right.
That was the first thing that hit me walking through the lobby, even with the big pickup truck sitting in the middle of it, was that this was, you know, thousands of people passed through those doors, and, you know, it was, they had marble and granite floors, and it was grand, and it it seeps into you that you're standing in a place that was one of the most expensive buildings in the 1900s in Kentucky. Now,
you're a big history buff, aren't you?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
I've read up a lot about this place since I saw it on television. So.
Oh yeah.
But you know, that, places like that will kind of you get bit by the bug, I think.
I was bitten by the bug very hard, and I'm so glad this was my, you know, the big first one. I didn't want to cut my teeth on the small ones and then go there. I just go for the, you know. I'm kind of an instant gratification kind of girl.
That's what she said. Yeah. I'm sorry I had to. If Tanner, in honor of my son, I have to throw in that's what she said jokes whenever I possibly can.
Of course, so if you go. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so when you go big all the way.
I went big, yeah. that's the place where I had my digital camera hanging around my wrist.
Uh-huh.
And I walked over and I said, guys, I'm going to go take some pictures by the truck. And then I remembered that my friend Meg couldn't come. And I said, I have a message for anybody that's here listening. Aunt Meg says hi. And reached down to pick up my digital camera. And one of the batteries was literally almost boiling inside my camera.
And is that something you've ever experienced before, Teresa?
No.
A really hot battery?
No, these are industrial, commercial-grade energizers. My husband sells them from his warehouse, and we use them for years, and I have never had one go bad. I said, he says, the thing about it is we sell them to the government, so. we picked it up. I couldn't even take it out of the camera with my hand. I had to dump it on the floor.
Yeah.
And we left it there and came back and got it the second time through the building. I examined it the next day. There were no burn marks on it. There were no bubbles on it. There was no leakage on it. It was exactly like the battery I put back in the camera. So,
did you test it to see if it worked?
No, I threw it away.
Because it could have exploded in your face. Let's be
camera and ruined all the pictures that I took from Waverly Hills. So.
Yeah, or you could have been a Darwin Award, you know. And we try to discourage people from becoming awards unless we don't like them.
I could have been typing this show because I blew my vocal cords out with acid. Yeah. But I don't know if that was a coincidence with the battery itself, or, you know, I don't know. It just kind of, I was like, guys, I made all three of them come and fill the camera and then fill that battery when I threw it out on the floor. I said, this can't be just me. I was like, okay, I don't want to ruin my camera. Let's dump it. And so I thought, okay, thanks. I did. I turned around and said, hey, Aunt Meg says hi. You know, and now I'm blaming the hot battery on Meg. Wade said that on the first floor when we were going on the very first tour, that something had pulled on the flashlight that was hanging from his belt. And Chad and Cheryl saw the flashlight. It looks like a baseball bat. It's not something that, you know, if it were pulled on, there's probably somebody back there grabbing a hold of it. It's
right.
It's a 6D cell maglot.
Oh, those things are. Yeah, Jim has one of those too. You could kill a bear with one of those things.
It's a great weapon, but yeah, it saved me in the body shoot too for later. Because, well, he turned it off, and while I've actually got my hand on my flashlight, I'm like, oh, no, you have to turn that back on.
Right.
Had my own flashlight, I have my hand on it, and I'm like, turn it back on.
So that leads me to a question really quickly, just because if I don't ask you now, I'm going to forget. How overwhelming did the darkness in that place feel to you? Did you go dark?
We went dark all the way in the bottom of the body chute, yes.
And how was that? Was it oppressive? Was it creepy? Were you worried that there were going to be bats in your hair, which is what I would be worrying about?
Right. Well, the bats were on the fifth floor. We did not, of course, go dark on the way down because I'm clumsy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, I
love
too.
That, sister.
we had to use the stair side. They didn't want us to use the slope side, so we're on the stairs that, as well as going forward and going down 500 feet, they lean. So you've got the funhouse effect of falling forward the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that can really mess it up, can it?
That was a huge factor. It was hot. It was like 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so it was extremely humid. And if nobody else knows this, claustrophobia sets off with humidity.
Yeah.
If you're out in a very long
it
period
does.
Of time, it will freak you out. So it was humid. It was dark. The bats didn't worry me so much. They were on the fifth floor when we were up there, so I thought all the bats are outside, we don't have to worry about that. But at the bottom, yeah, I think I freaked myself out more than the place.
Mm-hmm. That can happen. That happens to even seasoned investigators, so
it was a combination of the heat, the tilt. Of course, at the bottom it was kind of cool, but you can't get out from the bottom. That gate doesn't open, so
oh, like, sweet. So you have to go back up.
Yeah, I'm 500 feet down the side of a mountain in a tunnel that I can almost touch both sides of the walls and the ceiling if I, you know, stretched out really hard, and I can't get out from down here.
Yeah.
So,
I
think if I did it again when it was cooler and I knew what to expect, I think I could probably stay down there longer.
Mm-hmm.
But Wade did get out the night vision scope. And the only part that was about it was our illuminator wasn't working properly. Mm-hmm. So we borrowed one that wasn't quite as effective as the one he had to go with his scope. So we could only see really about, you know, 50 or 60 feet instead of, like, we would have been able to see really far up the tunnel with the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping to use the scope. And it's a first gen, so we couldn't really take it where there was any other light. So it was perfect for the body shoot because nobody else was there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I was hoping to see a little bit more with it. So then I got disappointed and said, all right, let's go back up. But, yeah, if a bat had flown through on the hour, I probably would have died.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes even a moth in the absolute darkness when you're looking through something like IR, which creates a really spooky effect anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even something like a moth can be enough to go, ah!
anything in the dark becomes bigger, meaner, nastier, and hungrier. So,
well, since we walked down with the flashlight on, I knew what to expect. We didn't see any spiders, which was cool. I didn't play a Steve Gonzalez.
you didn't get touched by a plant.
I didn't get touched by a plant because they've got all the plants off the roof now. That's, you know, how what can I say? of course,
Did Andy keep you in a drawer like he keeps his wife in a drawer?
No, I refused to get in the drawer after I heard the noise. If they had put some WD-40 on the slide so it wouldn't make that noise, I would have gotten in the drawer. But the drawer would have been enough to make me just, like, crawl. So I was actually going to do it. Cheryl and Chad, I kind of told them that I would do it. But in the end, when she pulled that drawer out and it went,
you never know what's going to trigger it, what your triggers are, do you? No. It just, I understand.
The box itself didn't look that scary. You know, the tray itself was particle board. I worked at Home Depot for 5 years. It doesn't scare me. But that noise did it. It's like,
So do you want to hear something really funny? I'm about to reveal how neurotic I am, but people who listen to this show already know. Particle board would freak me out. I have this thing. I'm not kidding you. I have this thing about raw feeling wood. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't stand popsicle sticks or tongue depressors. There was this commercial that they did during the Olympics, and it was all tongue depressors. Do you guys remember it? It was like, it had like, and I would have to hide my eyes because the thought of tongue depressors and wood. So the particle board would be enough to freak me out, and I wouldn't be able to go in a drawer either.
Yeah, but I think that squeaking noise is I would have to have that because that's just all part of the experience.
Oh, yeah. That just kept me from, if I could have crawled in there myself without, of course, it's like 4 feet off the ground. If I could have crawled in there myself without killing myself, I would have done it probably. But as far as getting in and letting them make that noise closing me up in it, not at all.
Do you tend to be claustrophobic, Teresa?
I'm a little bit claustrophobic, and very funny things set it off. Like, I was claustrophobic in the grandstands at the Bristol Night Race with 160,000 of my closest friends.
Yeah, but that's because people are taller than you. My problem. That's because people are taller than me.
I get that way in a Walmart on Saturday afternoons. There's just so many people.
Well, me too, but that's just the unwashed masses.
Yeah, well... Bristol it's a huge grandstand, but it looks like a postage stamp when you're in it. And just the thought that there were 159,999 other people in an outdoor arena, I had to sit on the outside of the aisle. Of course, I'd do that anyway, but right. Wade was trying to usher me in to sit down, and I said, I can't sit in there. And he's like, what? I said, I can't sit in there. People's knees in my back and my knees in somebody else's back and sitting shoulder to shoulder. No, that's why I don't go to football games anymore.
Yeah. I'm not claustrophobic, but if they ask me if I'm claustrophobic, like before I have to have one of those, the MRI and the closed machine, I tell them yes. You know why? Because they'll give you Valium.
Valium.
Oh, sweet. So the Percocet isn't enough, huh?
Anyway, so enough about me. Let's talk about Waverly.
Yeah, I got one good story, too, for everybody that hasn't heard it yet before I go.
Is this the one you told me?
Yeah, on the fourth floor.
Oh, I can't wait.
We decided we would take a little tour on our own. We split off from Liz and Sue, and we went on from the second floor. Now, on the second floor, I kind of think I saw some shadow people, but not positive, because it could be eyes adjusting to dark and all that. Yeah. We passed the third floor because Andy and his group had some experiments going on. And so we went on up to the fourth and then played on the fifth floor with the bats for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'm tired of Batty flying around my head, and I'm singing the song from Fern Gully in my head that, Batty did. And I'm like, okay, let's go down to the fourth floor again. And on the way back to the stairwell, we find a ball.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if somebody put it there to do an experiment. If somebody did, I'll make my apologies here, because we picked it up. Wade goes, hey, let's play. Rolls it down the hall. Well, it rolls into a room. Mm-hmm. Okay.
On its
own, but it was down the part where there was no glass in the windows.
Okay, so it could have been... Let's stop for a minute. I want to know what kind of ball it was. What was the material? How heavy...
It was a child's rubber ball, like you buy at mm-hmm. any store.
Like one of those red rubber balls?
Like the
bombardment balls?
It was a little bouncy ball, the shiny ones that come in different colors.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So those are pretty lightweight, right?
It wasn't like a four-square ball. It was just smooth plastic.
Okay.
But those are actually pretty common in there. People bring those in quite a bit so little Timmy can play.
Yeah, well, little Timmy was not on the third floor that night.
Oh, gotcha. So
and Kieran O'Keefe has debunked that ball by saying it was the wind blowing it around in the hallway. And they rolled it out of a room and it rolled back in. Okay, so I said, let's go down here to the waiting room that has glass in it. So all the windows in this room have glass in it.
Mm-hmm.
Wade rolls it towards the wall. Now, these little balls, if it hit the wall, it would bounce off. This one didn't bounce. It stopped probably about 6 inches before it got to the wall and took a left turn. So I'm, of course, okay, the floor is uneven. as Wade walks over to look at the floor, the ball is still rolling. And so I'm like, you're watching it. On it. So I have no pictures of it. I have no documentation. I have me and Wade. That's but it proceeded to roll all over this room. If Wade would roll it, it would roll in a different direction. It would stop and make a right turn. We rolled it back out into the hall, and it sat in the middle of the hall and rolled in circles by itself. We picked
in
the ball
circles.
Up.
In circles. That's amazing.
While it was kind of rolling back and forth, and so I said, okay, pick it up to see if it's uneven, if it's kind of flat. So I thought if it was flat, it would rock back and forth. It was not flat. It was round. It was perfectly round, rolling around in the middle of the hall floor by itself.
So,
I definitely think that Kieran McKeith is wrong then.
Yeah.
Kieran O'Keefe,
thank you.
He's getting a big old bite me on that one. yeah, now on the part where it rolled from the hall into the room, it rolled to a room on the opposite side on the front from the sun porches. So I'm giving that one to the wind. But when it rolled back out, I got to take Kieran O'Keefe off my favorite parapsychologist list now.
Yeah.
Well, but I think parapsychologists have to feel like they can come up with an explanation for things,
Well, he couldn't debunk that marble thing at Eastern State, so I don't like him anymore anyway. A blue one came back. Yeah, because Kieran's got a pocket full of marbles at the other end of the hall.
Yeah. But, Kieran O'Keefe, let's come on our show. The opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of... No, I'm just kidding.
I just thought, the ball thing, that was... to me, it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I will definitely have more equipment. Cheryl and Chad are talking about going back next, or 2012. I'm going to spearhead one to go back next spring. So,
You know what? Okay. I have a job, Teresa. I'll be there.
All right.
Okay. I have, my problem this time was I had no job and couldn't afford to go. Well, I'm a job now, sister, so I'm there.
All right, cool. I might just fly back to Washington with you.
Well, I want you, and I really would like you, and I promise I won't hit on your husband. I'll just make him talk to me a lot. But I really want you guys to come out, because I know that you're captivated by Wellington, which Jenny is going to come on and talk about later. But I would love to have you guys come out. You stay at the house. I'll make us some nice tacos or something. Yeah.
Well, tacos are good, but I'm thinking about those prawns that your son wanted for his birthday dinner.
Oh, those were awesome.
Your son wants prawn for his birthday dinner?
For his birthday dinner, he made me make oven-broiled garlic prawns, butterfly, with smashed fingerling potatoes that were made with roasted garlic, and I can't remember everything he wanted, but he had a pretty fancy birthday dinner, and fortunately his mom likes to cook, so y'all come out, Teresa, and I'll make you a nice sauce.
Shoot, yeah.
I have some spaghetti, and I make you a nice sauce.
A nice salsa. Nice, I will tell you, I did forget one of my second floor adventures, as I know we were going to bring somebody else on here soon.
No, let's go for it.
While we were on the second floor, this is the first time through. We actually made two runs of the hotel, or the hospital. I keep calling it a hotel. On the first run through on the second floor, I'd stopped in the hallway looking out over the sun porches. The hospital itself is not as dark as one would think, because it's all open and there are streetlights and cars and planes and, so.
Mm-hmm.
So... it's not really as dark as you would think in most parts, but I stopped in one of the dark spots and let everything calm down and was just listening and watching around me. And my camera was dangling, of course, from middle of my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the camera comes up and swings up and hits the bottom of a bottle of water I have in my hand. And I'm like, well, now that's interesting.
Huh.
What's that? And I said, well, somebody wanted to play because they just pushed this camera into this bottle of water. I was like, it didn't.
Oops. Did we lose Teresa? I think we lost Teresa. Oh, wait.
No,
Teresa, are you there?
I'm still here, I promise.
Oh, okay.
That was really weird.
That
now
was
everybody
weird.
Is so did Big Wolf go to bed?
I think he's in the kitchen.
Oh, have him come say hi real fast because the ladies in the chat room want to hear him talk.
Okay, well, I don't have my system rigged like I used to. I usually rig the speakers so they'll play. And we can both share the mic. But
we can, you know what? Well, we can have him do a voiceover for one of our commercials or something, and then I can tell everybody
that.
Yeah, there you go.
Do that.
Okay, awesome. So, Teresa, I appreciate you coming on. We have
thank
to,
you, Teresa.
We have to go to break. And hey, yes,
yeah.
Okay,
I'm still
so
here.
Okay, we're getting like a little lag. That's so weird.
Yeah.
So you know, give the Big Wolf a big hi for me.
You have got it.
All right.
And I appreciate you asking me to come on.
Oh, hey, I'm glad you did. We missed you last week, so it was great that we were able to do it this week.
I'll do it again. You know I'm a big publicity hound, so.
Yeah, you are, boy. So are you. So am I.
Nothing wrong with shameless acts of self-promotion. I'm a big one.
That's right. Attention, we're at Horses of the World Unite. So, guys, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to first-time investigator Michelle Pillow about her time at Cowtown.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
This week, enjoy Art Smart products your family will eat up. One serving of Van Gogurt contains the live and active culture your kids need. Buy one, get higher test scores free. And nothing satisfies a child's craving for self-expression like Tchaikovsky's Nutcrackers, now with more music and dance in every bite. Try original flavor or new Sugar Plum Fairy. Feed your kids the arts. Visit AmericansForTheArts.org to learn how. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
And we are back with the show. Pretty good interview with Teresa, eh, Karen?
Oh, yeah, I love Teresa. And yeah, while we were off the air, I got to talk to Big Dog. So I've had my Big Dog fill tonight. I'm feeling, I'm happy.
Hey, Karen. It's actually the Big Wolf.
Big Wolf.
Big Dog, you know what? Jim is a Huskies fan, and he's got a Huskies website open on this computer, and I keep seeing the word dog.
So, right.
No worries.
Well, for our second interview, we have with us Paranormal Underground's very own Michelle Pillow. And how you doing, Michelle?
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi. Good, good. You're going to be telling us about the Old Cowtown Museum in Wichita?
Yes, it was wonderful. First time investigation. Wonderful.
Great.
Yeah, so have you had paranormal experiences leading up to your the big investigation?
Not really. I've had questionable things happen, but not anything I would... I'm kind of a once-proof type of person, and without any type of solid proof, I tend to find other explanations for things. I'm kind of a skeptical believer.
Yeah.
So things that have happened to me have been, like, just really... kind of, I don't know, could be summed up in the story of where I'm standing in line at the cable company to pay my bill, and I hear somebody like breathing and invading my personal space behind me, and it feels like it's kind of in my ear. I turn around and nobody's there, and I could have, you know, and I'm ready to, like, you know, politely tell them to back off. So little things like that have happened, but it's nothing definitive where I can say, yes, this was paranormal, or, you know,
right.
I was having a distracted day. But I've always been interested in the paranormal and the unexplained. I believe there are things in this world that science has explained away a lot, but not everything. And I think that there's alternate explanations to scientific explanations. So I've always had a great fascination for it. And if I ever did find proof, that would just be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's despite all the mass communication and everything that we have, I mean, to us who, you know, research and investigate the paranormal, it's still a pretty big world out there, and there's still a lot to be looked into.
Yeah, I agree. I think science has explained a lot, you know, and scientific advancement's great. I'm all for it. I do take scientific explanations for a lot of things. But I do think that some of the things that have been explained, you know, there are alternative explanations for it, and I do think that in the future, other things will come out that, you know, they used to believe the world was flat, now it's round.
Well, I believe that science, in some of its forms, can be as dogmatic as religion.
Yes.
So,
well, that's why Charles Ford called the called it the priestcraft with the scientists of his day.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it as being its own, you know, little priesthood, and they were dogmatic, and they weren't willing to bend on anything that was strange and unusual. Fortunately, nowadays, though, a lot of scientists will actually say, yeah, that's possible, but let's see if we can recreate it.
Yeah.
And that's the first step into, you know, making new discoveries. So I think it's a wonderful time as far as that's concerned.
I think so. So, Cowtown. So you went with, tell me the name of the group, because I always, we had them on the show, loved them. They talked about Cowtown. And of course, that's as far as I go because it's slipping my mind right now. Tell me the name of the group that you went with. Wichita Paranormal, right?
Yes,
right?
Wichita Paranormal Research Society, WPRS.
Right, okay.
They're located in Wichita, Kansas. I actually met them at a book signing with one of the investigators' wives. And we became friends and, you know, started talking. And she mentioned that her husband did, you know, investigations. And so, you know, I started talking to him. And, of course, we went all geeky ghost hunter, Ghostbusters.
And, no. Don't refer to paranormal investigators as Ghostbusters. Please, God, no.
Okay, it's awesome show, though. It's a cult classic. I'm not
and
saying that's
Rick,
what we do, but...
Rick, what am I going to say about Ghostbusters? What do I always say when we start talking about movies like this?
You hate them?
I have never seen it.
You've never seen Ghostbusters?
I don't know if that's even allowed.
Yeah, that's.
I'm pretty sure that you're going to get your like pug walking papers when we're done.
Yeah, you're done.
By that.
They need me, man. I'm indispensable. Yeah, that's it.
Well, it's nice to be you. I'm just like the hired gun. They're probably going to wait. Yeah, we're going to get rid of Rick here real soon. So, yeah, all right, Michelle, let's talk about Cowtown. And I have to be honest with you about something. Whenever I think of like the Cowtown Museum and all that, I always think of a Far Side comic that there's.
I think of Muppets.
Holsteins and Black Anguses walking around, you know, and the little fat kid with the big cheeks. I always think of Far Side, but please go on, proceed.
Well, Wichita, Kansas, they have this area in town that has a bunch of, you know, history museums and art museums. And part of that area is called the Wichita's Old Cowtown Museum, which mm-hmm. is what this is. And what it is, it was an abandoned, or not abandoned, but it was an old sand bed where they basically relocated historical homes, historical businesses, artifacts to this area to kind of recreate what life would have been like, you know, in the 1800s. When, you know, things were around, one of the houses on the property, it's called the Murdoch House, which has the most reports of activity, was actually from a guy who was one of the first, like, Old West journalists from the area.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his family had lived there, and supposedly his daughter had died. Her name was Love in Tangle. She was named after a flower. There's been reports of her in the house as far as, you know, catching EVPs. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with the ghost box, but if the listeners isn't, it's kind of a scanner that picks up radio waves, and mm-hmm. it's kind of as far as I'm concerned, it's still kind of experimental as far as its use, but it's something that's being, you know, played with and used, which is one thing that I really liked about the group I investigated with. WPRS is really good about, you know, getting new equipment, trying it in an objective way. So it's not like everything they catch is like, oh, we got it.
I know, right?
They test the equipment, they retest it, and they're, you know, and they hit it, you know, as believers. And, of course, everybody on the group kind of approaches it in their own way because, you know, people are different. But I really, you know, watching them and how they dealt with the equipment and how they blended the new equipment and then redid it with older equipment that was kind of tried and true, I was very impressed by that. But mm-hmm. The only thing that really happened when I was there, aside from feeling some weird pressure in some of the different museum areas, because this thing is like several blocks worth of buildings.
Weird, mm-hmm. weird pressure.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate?
Well, you know, like, kind of like when you're taking off in an airplane or...
Oh, yeah, okay.
In an airplane, yeah. You kind of get that... Just that mm-hmm. real heavy feeling.
Yeah, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hotel on the premises where you go outside and you go up some stairs that are outside to a top level of the, you know, of this building that they had relocated there. And there were two rooms set up. One looked kind of like a gentleman's gambler type room with cards and whiskey bottles. And another one looks like a ladies' room.
Mm-hmm.
And in the, you know, it was open to the outside air. So there was a breeze coming into this, like, short hallway that kind of, you know, goes to these two rooms, which are halfway blocked off. You lean over into the gentleman's room, and the air feels normal and cool, and it's actually farther away from the door. The room that was closer to the door, the ladies' room, as soon as I kind of leaned over into it, it felt like that airplane pressure. And
yeah.
They were both open to the outside, so they're, you know, I would have to do more investigation on it, but just mm-hmm. feeling that difference, you know, made me curious to learn more.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've experienced that in a few places.
Yeah.
And I haven't done enough investigations to be able to compare it to others since this was actually my first.
Right. No, I know. And so everything is new to you and you don't know what to discount and what to think more about. And I understand. Yeah. I remember my first one and yep.
Yeah, my first one, I was on my own, and that's when I got shoved over by a gigantic black mass. So, you know, at least you got off light.
Oh, great. I looked at this, I think, more as a learning experience. I did my research before I went. I did a lot of reading. I talked to the people at the, you know, the Paranormal Underground Forum, you know, and listened to their stories and their techniques and the do's and don'ts. So I went in armed with a lot of knowledge, but of course not armed with a lot of hands-on experience. And I think the investigation was wonderful. Even though I didn't have, like, a lot, you know, little things like the pressure thing happened, but nothing definitive. And, but, you know, I proved to myself that I was brave enough to do it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to get scared or chicken out or become, you know, so frozen with fright. Because I did get the creeps in a few of the places.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't count that because, you know, anytime you go into a new situation, you kind of feel apprehensive.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I don't count that as paranormal. I count that as me being nervous from hearing the stories and collecting stories beforehand as, you know, kind of a reporter being there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I was very impressed with the group. They're great about answering my questions, incessant as they were.
Yeah, I understand to do that too.
But there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you should never feel ashamed of asking, you know, questions, even if they do seem stupid to you. They could, you know, bring something to the case. Yeah.
I always ask questions. It's the only way that you learn. And,
yes,
you know, and they let me use the equipment, so I got a feel for that. So I think in that way it was great, because if I do go on another investigation and I have been invited back, I'll have that knowledge behind me. That way if something does happen, I'll be a little bit more prepared. I won't be fiddling around, you know,
right,
with meters and cameras and trying to, you know, figure out how things work.
Right. So, well, and being a reporter, because you were there to write an article about it. And so you were there as a journalist. And that put you, that was how I did my first investigation too. And it removes you, at least for me, it gave me one layer of being removed from what was going on. Did you sort of experience that too?
Well, I think because I knew the people going in, and they were I cannot say enough about this group. They were very welcoming, very open. Mm-hmm. Now, they let me play with their equipment, which is just awesome. And, I mean,
oh, the equipment's
TV
fun.
Recorder. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's fun.
I got to play with the toys. They showed me how it worked. So they were, at first, you know, I did hold back a little bit because I didn't want to get in the way of setting up the equipment. But by the end of the night, you know, we were at that 3:30 in the morning when things were wrapped up, and you know, I jumped in there, I helped them pack up the equipment, and I felt more part of the group at towards the end, you know, being involved, because I'd kind of gotten past that I don't want to get in everybody's way, but they were also welcoming and just like, yeah, come on, do it, your turn. And
sure,
I jumped in with the EVPs, which I will say, talking to an empty room,
oh, you feel like an idiot, don't you?
Yeah.
That is strange, but I think I'm just strange enough that I, you know, I went with it.
You get used to it. It becomes a non-issue after a while, but for a while it does seem stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, after a while, you know, you finally get your own, you know, way of doing it, and you stop asking, you know, the questions like, is there anybody here who would like to make their presence known? You know, after a while, you work up your own
You have a conversation. Yeah. I just have a conversation with them.
Yeah, it's like I
asked a lot of history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and questions like that are good. Like, you know, what are you wearing? But
well,
no,
I did invite somebody to pour me a drink, and it did not happen. So.
Oh, well, that's just disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, there goes Rick's going to tell me I need intervention again now.
I'm concerned, Karen. I'm concerned.
As well you should be. Hey, I've had a kidney stone since April 1st. Leave me alone. Go on, Michelle.
I forgot where it's at.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm the queen of digression.
They didn't pour you a drink.
Yeah, well, I did invite a ghost to pour me a drink. Most of the EVP type questions I asked, I love history. I've studied history for years. I'm working towards my bachelor's in history very slowly on the side with work and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I continue to go on. So I love history. So I had tons of just like historical related questions, I think, asked as far as, and I'm the type of person I also write fiction novels. So with fiction, I do have to do a lot of research, especially with historical based fiction. And so I'm meticulous with like daily details. So I knew how tables should be set and they weren't set right. And so a lot of my questions, I try to personalize and gear towards the location of like, you know, do you want me to fix this for you? The table's not set right. And, you know,
perfect.
I just jumped in. I didn't know what I was doing, but I figured if I made an idiot out of myself, either everyone would die laughing, or they'd tell me, hopefully.
Well, I think
maybe
that that's kind
maybe
of...
I'm on YouTube.
I think that's kind of the spirit that you need to go in with things like that, that you have to be very, you know, you just have to kind of go in with the, well, I'm going to do the best I can, and if I look like a fool, I look like a fool. You know, at least you're not screaming, dude, run.
And the best possible equipment that you can go into any investigation with is your brain. That's it, right there.
And that makes complete sense, you know. And it's personalized, I think, to the location. But like I said, I have the benefit of, you know, well, I'm not saying that watching Ghost Hunter type shows are research, but you do get kind of a very beginner's glimpse, I think, at how different investigations can be run, how different theories are out there, how people approach it. And then I did my, you know, reading research beyond, you know, just watching television, which is kind of, for, I think, got a lot of people interested, like, hey, there are actually people out here who do this.
Yeah.
So that before it became popular on television, I think with me, you know, I had an inkling that there were people out there, but I didn't realize that they were so many people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot more in recent years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think, too, it's just people realize, like, hey, this is actually something that people can get together and do. And, you know, I think that the TV versions of it, you know, whereas it hasn't really guided people so much, it's just kind of given people the idea of, like, hey, you know what, this is actually possible. People can get together, and these types of things, they can happen. And groups started forming, and... you know, with like interest. And I just think, I love it. I think it's wonderful. And I think that it's great that people are getting a taste of the paranormal, getting, you know, if not proof, an idea that something could lie beyond what science tells us can be real and can't be real.
Yeah.
And getting alternative theories.
Yep.
I just think it's become too much, too faddish, you know? That's kind of my problem.
Yeah.
And
but those people, the people that are following, that are chasing a fad, will get bored with it, and they do get bored with it very soon and very quickly. And that's why you see so much turnover and so many groups form and break up. And, you know, but there are groups that have been around for years and years and years, like yours, Rick, like you. And those are the people that, you know, they've been doing it, and they're going to continue to do it because they're not doing it to be famous, and they're not doing it because they think they're going to get their own TV show, because, as we all know, that's going to happen. When's your TV show starting, Michelle, from doing your first investigation?
I'm still waiting for mine.
Is there a deal in the works that I don't know about?
Yeah. Well, see,
haven't sent me that assignment yet.
So you did not go into your first investigation believing that you would soon be on TV.
I hope not. If anything, they're YouTube videos of me messing up. I might have a million fans laughing at me right now.
Yeah. Well, could be, but you know, hey, you can make YouTube money, and you know. That's lots.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
For a t-shirt deal.
There you go. Is this something that you think that you would do as a hobby, or is it something that's kind of a novelty and fun to do once or twice, but that you wouldn't necessarily want to do over and over and over again?
Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely love doing it. I am interested in doing more. I think the problem I have right now is a problem a lot of people have, and that's time. I can't take off every weekend. To drive hours to go to investigation sites. I wish I could, and if I had the time, I would definitely be in there. I've been invited back. I am enthusiastic to go back, not only to Cowtown, which, even for the non-paranormal reasons, is a really great museum. If you're in the Wichita, Kansas area, I definitely recommend. It's oldcowtown.org, I believe, is the site.
Okay.
I recommend supporting and checking out the museum. I'm huge, you know, into supporting museums and
definitely
my vacation stops.
And they're sort of struggling right now with the economy museums are, so.
Yeah, that's why, you know, go support it. But, I would definitely go back. It's something I'm interested in. I've been, you know, researching and writing about paranormal topics, both in a fiction and nonfiction sense. I've been with PUG, I believe, a little over a year now. Around there, I would have to actually go look. I kind of lose track of how long I've been doing things. You know, I've had paranormal radio talk shows that I've done in the past. So I'm definitely interested in the paranormal. I don't think that's anything that's going to change as far as my involvement with it. It basically, I just kind of face life as opportunities come up. And you know, you just got to be enthusiastic about your, you know, life and opportunities and open to new possibilities on ideas. And if they come out there and somebody calls me tomorrow and goes, listen, we're going to do the White House. You want to be there? Yeah.
Call Rick and I too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
totally.
You know, what's your, do you have a top couple that you'd really like to go see and check out?
Well, you know, I think like a lot of people in America anyway that I talk to, tons of overseas locations. And the reason, like we were talking about, you know, the shows earlier, one of the reasons I actually like them is because I get to see the different locations and kind of, you know, the history behind them and that little brief overview. I'm actually more interested in that than the actual hunt that goes on.
Right.
Looking at the location and behind the scenes. And that's, you know, Rick, I believe, was saying earlier about the shows and, you know, the fad. That's why I kind of refer to them as a beginner's guide, where you can kind of feel for it there if it's something you're interested in, and then you have to go get personal experience and, you know, do actually other types of research into the field.
Right.
But I've seen a lot of those different locations where I'm just going, oh, I want to go there. You know, like the Stanley Hotel, everyone wants to go to the Stanley, you know, the Stephen King novels. And Karen wrote about the Wellington disaster, and I definitely want to go up there.
I can get you a front row seat for that one.
Yay. So, you know, there's just those different locations that I read about and, you know, hear about from just other investigators. And, you know, there's a ton of places. And I don't think any place is too big or too small, as long as, for me, having some type of historical reference always makes it more appealing, as opposed to, say, you know, somebody's house.
Yeah, I think the history is almost as cool as the paranormal stuff.
But I was just going to say, but doing a private investigating a private residence and knowing that you're helping a scared person out, it's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I could see that, especially if you were like full time investigating. But I'll admit my interest with it. If I thought I could help somebody out, you know, if I by going somewhere and if I could do that, and I thought I had the experience, hands down, I would choose to help somebody over the best location in the world.
Yeah.
If it was a matter of me with my experience now and somebody said, do you want to go to this private residence? They are guaranteed hauntings at 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock. Or do you want to go to this kind of
state for the veal
historical location? You know, I would be like, okay, the historical location. Just because of the history there. And because, of course, you know, going to college and stuff for history, I love it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, hey, Michelle, I know you're going to come back on next week and you're going to actually talk about some of your writing and with your website partner, right?
Yes, Mandy Roth.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead? Why don't you go ahead and give out your website address for a little extra plug tonight, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. My website's real easy. It's michellepillow.com. Pillow, just like it sounds, like just like you sleep on. Real easy to remember. We also have ravenhappyhour.com, all one word, where we have like a paranormal blog, free online stories for readers, and, you know, just a chat group, bunch of different treats for readers. Generally, they're fiction readers of either paranormal romance or paranormal fiction that kind of hang out at those areas. But,
And October's a big month for you guys at Raven Happy Hour, right?
Oh, yeah. October's always a huge month. We have tons of contests. I think I've got like 4 or 5 contests lined up for the month. And we have a huge scavenger hunt where it's over 50 authors, usually 50 to 100 prizes. I don't have the final tally yet. It's an all-month scavenger hunt online. It's really easy to participate. It's just a fun game. You turn your answers in, and you get entered in for a prize. And usually there's a lot of prizes to go around. So,
cool.
Nice.
Cool. Okay, well, we're going to go to break. So thank you, Michelle. I appreciate it. And stick around. We're going to be talking to Jenny Brown next. And she had her first investigation here just a couple weeks ago with Jim and me and NWPIA up at Wellington.
Thank you, Michelle.
We'll be right, wonderful.
Be right back.
Thank you guys thanks. For having me.
Thank you.
This is Karen Frazier, founder of the Namaste Project. Several months ago, I was really struggling with a number of people in my life. I got tired of being angry all of the time. One day I was driving home thinking about how I could stop being angry when the words, the Namaste Project, popped into my head. In that moment, I understood that every person, even the ones who made me angry, had a light of the divine in them, and if I could just find that light in every person I encountered, then my world would be a better place. The Namaste Project was born. Now I'm inviting you to join me. Visit namasteproject.org to learn how you can change your world. Change happens one person at a time. I hope you'll join me. That's namasteproject.org.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Did you know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
location identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, so we're back, and we are now going to be talking with Jenny Brown. And Jenny, hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. Karen. Hi, Rick.
Hi, everybody.
Jenny came up to Wellington, about a month ago now, do you think?
Yeah, it was late August, so maybe just a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks ago with NWPIA and me and Jim and Tanner. And and Jenny is pretty skeptical. And so go ahead and why don't you tell us just a little bit of your pre-ghost hunting experience, belief about ghosts, and interest in the paranormal, Jenny?
Well, like most people, I got hooked on it from Ghost Hunters, and I know, but it was more humorous than anything to me. It was kind of like, are you kidding me? These guys are full of crap.
Wait, do you find me funny? Hey, no. Okay, go on.
Well, yeah, Karen, you're pretty funny. But I did, and then I kind of hooked on to Skiffy a little bit and met all you guys and realized that I wasn't the only one that was pretty skeptical about it. But it's and I'm not so much, I would say, skeptical about the paranormal in general. It's more what we're shown, like the evidence that we're shown on TV and stuff
People
that... And, you know, even people that you don't know that are saying, oh, well, I got this EVP and I got this EVP, and are like, yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, when you've, like, having met Karen and even, you know, talking to Cheryl and all those guys, I'm more likely to believe what you guys would tell me just because I trust you and I know you're not trying to fake me out and lie to me and say, oh, well, I caught this and blah, blah. If you can't hear it, then you're no good. But
yeah,
I think that, you know, it's so subjective too. I mean, there's a lot of subjectivity to what the EVPs are that you hear and even some of the stuff that you see. And I know, like, especially when Zach in his bleens and tight black shirt tell me all about his enhanced audio and I don't hear anything but rah, 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 then I'm obviously not.
I never hear their stinking EVPs.
I always think, okay,
I mean, and they'll play them three or four times and I'll read, like, when they put the little words up across the top, and I never hear those things.
Watch out what you say about Zach, because that ego may come alive and kill you.
Oh, oh, but you gotta love Zach and his bleens. I mean, he's just for comic appeal itself. I mean, I can't not just fall for Zach and his wondrousness and his oh my gods and
he's horribly entertaining.
That demon is out to get us. They want us to die here, dude.
They're dragging us straight to hell.
I know. I love it. He's great. And, like, I have to give a shout out to my skeptic in crime, Gavin, over there at the chat site too. He and I sit there, and neither one of us can hear. Holla. We can never hear any of that, and we'll be texting back and forth. You're like, did you hear anything? No, I didn't hear anything. So the evidence that they show is so shaky, and it's so just ridiculously out there. And I kind of feel bad for some of the people that are, you know, showing their places and, you know, like even like Waverly and stuff, where you guys have actually been there. And it's, I don't know. I think it's kind of an embarrassment to the place to have guys like this go there and kind of not make a mockery of it, but it becomes a mockery just because, you know, what they're showing us really probably is all faked, because you can't predict going there one time that you're going to catch all this stuff.
Right.
So you are pretty skeptical. I mean, you know, of at least what you see on TV.
Oh yeah. And even like, you know, going out there, like when I met you guys at Wellington, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to catch anything. This is just going to be me being a chicken out here in the woods and the scariness and mm-hmm. Jim. I mean, it was going to be, I knew I was going to freak out, but it was such a neat place in itself that it kind of got me more in the spirit of, all right, just calm down. Let's just see what happens. And it was definitely an interesting experience. And I've thought a lot about it since then. It's been on my mind, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I really enjoyed with you was actually when I sent you that audio anomaly after, where it's from when we were sitting out there on the Overlook, and I sent it to you, and your response was like, "Oh my God, I was there."
Yeah. It was, well, it's trippy, you know, when you're kind of sitting there and you catch this stuff on your audio afterwards, you're like, whoa, what the hell? I mean, I didn't hear that there. Are my ears playing tricks on me? And, you know, some of the stuff you'd send me something and I'd be like, okay, I got to figure out where that's at. And I'd have the same thing. And then that was kind of a trip for me to actually have stuff that, you know, I didn't hear when we were there. And, you know, and then there's some stuff like I sent you. I'm like, did Tanner blow the whistle 3 or 4 times? Cause I heard something else. And, you know, right. So a lot of it you can kind of, you know, discount when you get back to your place and you're not there in the moment, you know, you can actually kind of think about it. But there were some real trippy personal experiences out there that were pretty cool and actually really fun. I really enjoyed my time out there and I can't wait to go back. I got to give a shout out to NWPIA, Bert and Jamie. We had awesome time. I had an awesome time. And I can't wait to go back on the 2nd.
Yeah. So,
great.
So let's talk about some of those personal experiences you had, because I think that what I saw happening with you is that you started to realize that you didn't realize it. You know, it's not like what you see on TV, but the subtlety of personal experiences, I think, did it catch you by surprise?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, especially like, you know, when we were walking down there during the daytime, we were kind of going through the snow shed and getting our bearings and stuff. And I was just like, I was at that time, I was kind of more encapsulated by the excitement of the actual place and the history behind it and how just cool it was. And the whole rebar that they tried to break down and how it's just hanging there. I mean, that's kind of trippy in itself too. And it was a neat place. But then when we started to go back down there at night, it was just kind of,
It's a
total different experience. Your senses become alive, you know, and I was more relaxed actually going through at night because I'd been down there already. I'd been through it. I'd seen what it was. I knew everywhere we were walking. And, you know, it was strange how things started to happen real slow at first, you know, and then it seemed like there was kind of a little bit of a hotbed of activity and especially in that Area 61, I don't know how to describe it, but it is the weirdest. It was the weirdest sensation I'd ever had. I mean, we're walking, and it just totally overwhelmed me with this like pressure.
Yeah. That's pretty common at Area 61.
Yeah, and it felt like I was walking in this wind tunnel, but there wasn't any wind, and I couldn't move forward, and then I got really dizzy, and then all of a sudden it was just gone, like that.
Those were the roofies that I know.
Is that what that was? I wondered. I knew I was feeling a little spacey.
God, but it Karen, relax on the drugs.
I have a problem.
But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, we sat out there on the observation deck and I felt like someone kind of touched my leg. That was kind of trippy. And I sat there that whole night going, okay, it could have been a bug going up my jeans. It could have just been the way my leg was sitting and my muscles shook or something. You know, I was trying to figure out any possible way I could to say that was nothing, that it was just totally environmental. There was no ghosty, no paranormal, anything, but it was tough to discount that. And, you know, you can't going in as a skeptic. It was just really tough to not let my, you know, to let myself accept that some stuff could possibly be happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that you started to.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, it's not that and that's why I'm really curious to see what happens the second time around, to see if I have similar experiences or something different, or even, you know, I kind of even thought maybe the spirits that were there were a little leery of me at first because I was new and maybe they'll be more open.
Oh, no, they love new people.
Well, you know, it's just, it'll be interesting to see kind of how unskeptic or still skeptic I become after I've gone back a second time, but...
Well, I will tell you that Wellington has made believers out of a lot of skeptics.
I'm sure. I can see why. I mean, it's, you know, the history behind it itself and just the tragedy that happened there is so just emotional as it is that, you know, my mom actually was talking today about how when they went to Hawaii and they went to the Pearl Harbor, exhibit. She says, you know, I'm not, she's more of a skeptic than I am. And she says, but I was completely overwhelmed with this feeling of sadness and just chills. And I said, well, that's kind of what it was like there at Wellington. You know, it was just like, you're overwhelmed with the fact that these 96 people have died here. And you don't know if they've moved on or if they're still hanging out there or if there's people that weren't even on the train that are there, you know, people that just loved the town so much. I mean, it's just, it's quite the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the ghost box, because we did some with the ghost box.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about, you know, now that you've had some time to process it, how you feel about it. Thing.
That was trippy. I mean, that was, you know, at first when you started going through the stations and stuff, and you're kind of listening, it's just all this garbled, and I'm like, what the? You're not going to be able to hear anything out of this. And then your ears kind of get,
right?
Yeah, your ears kind of adjust to it, and you're kind of like, okay, so I'm getting, you know, you've been through the signals a couple of times, so you're kind of picking up what is actually being broadcast and what isn't. And
yeah.
You know, we heard stuff at the time, and we're both saying, did you hear that? You know, and in fact, I think one time, didn't we even say we thought we heard it say Gavin? And
Yeah. It did. I heard it on recording.
Yeah, it was strange. I actually sent that to him, too. He kind of tripped out. But it was interesting to hear the different things, and even the stuff that you said you heard at the time when I went back and listened to it, because I didn't hear it at the time, I could pick it up. I could say, oh yeah, that's where that is. And oh, now I hear it. And so it was really strange, because it's not like, you know, it's underneath the stuff. It's not like, you know, really loud saying, hi, Karen, I'm on the ghost box. I mean, it's really, really subtle, and you really have to pick it up. But then I sat there, the skeptic in me went, come on, you know, you are stringing together stuff that you want to hear, and you're stringing together syllables from these broadcasts, and you're
the
making
skeptic in me, yeah, the skeptic in me still says that.
So, yeah, and I
definitely feel very skeptical about the ghost box as well. I mean, who's to say that it's not stray radio signals, and that, like you said, Jenny, you put them together, and this is what you hear.
I totally agree. And even going through it a second time, you know, on the audio, having, you know, being at my house in my very unparanormal location, you know, listening to it again, I thought, oh, I can totally see how my mind is going to play tricks on me. Because you're already in this completely different state of mind out there. Yeah. And so you're listening specifically for some kind of communication from these spirits. And so, you know, the hope that you have in there kind of makes you hear things. And that's why I always say that it's so subjective, some of this evidence, especially EVPs and ghost box type stuff, because your brain is playing tricks on you the whole time you're out there. And the personal experiences, to me, I think are almost a little more convincing, because
when they're your own personal experiences, they become pretty compelling, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, the stuff that the evidence that they show us is, it's great and everything, you know, and yeah, okay, I can kind of see that happen. But until I've experienced it for myself, I'm going to have a hard time believing anybody. And I did experience some weird stuff out there.
Yeah.
You know, Jenny, you almost sound like you're kind of like teetering on the edge of cynicism, though.
Oh, I am the skeptic cynic, to like you wouldn't believe. But it's tough, because there's a part of me that really, really, really wants to believe that there's something after we die, and that there's not only just a place, but a way that we can still communicate and be around the ones that we love. And that part of me is the part that convinces the skeptic in me to go through with this kind of stuff, to go investigate and to experience it for yourself, because it just, it's fascinating to me. And I think that to not let myself go experience this stuff would be kind of a shame to myself. And, and you know, so I'm really glad that I went. I'm really glad that I sucked it up and didn't become such a skeery that
you were really brave. You were very brave.
Oh, well, I was hiding a lot, because I was pretty freaked out at first.
Well, when you walk in and it's really, really dark, and it feels so heavy. It's like what Michelle was talking about. You get that heaviness when you walk in, and that takes a few minutes to adjust to. That's for sure.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, and we had that thunderstorm off in the distance. And so in my head, yeah. I'm like, oh, the barometric pressure is just messing with you, Jenny. You're fine. There's nothing going on. But, you know, why would it just be at that one particular spot? Or why wouldn't it happen the whole time? Or, you know, why did your ears start ringing? I mean, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. It was just way too weird for me to debunk completely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that going in with a healthy amount of skepticism is always a good thing. And I understand, I hear you saying a lot of the same things that I said, and I'd investigated before I went to Wellington, but what I hear you saying are a lot of things I said before I went to Wellington, especially that I had that, I knew that what I wanted was to believe that something happened afterward. And that knowing that I wanted to believe made it almost impossible for me to believe, if that makes any sense at all.
No, it totally does, yeah, because that's exactly how I felt too.
Yeah, and I will tell you that Wellington changed all of that for me. It changed all of that for me on the very first visit, because I had a lot of the same type of experiences you did. I was getting poked in my shoulder and that heaviness in Area 61, although I didn't have the weird thing that you did where you felt like somebody was pushing you and actually stopping you from walking. That's really interesting to me. That was perhaps the most interesting personal experience that you had for me, because I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, that one of all of them freaked me out most, just because, you know, it wasn't like I was carrying anything really heavy that was weighing me down. The area is like completely flat, so it's not like, you know, I was straining to climb up a hill or anything like that. It was just all of a sudden, I just felt like something said, you're not moving from this point forward. And I fought through it, you know, and I even asked it, I'm like, am I walking too fast for you? Do you want me to stop? Is there something you're trying to tell me? And I didn't catch anything on my audio. I listened for that stuff, but it was this overwhelming, hard to catch my breath type of feeling. And all of a sudden I got kind of dizzy and I thought I was going to fall over a little bit, and then it was gone just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we also had, now, did you smell? We both smelled the maple, right?
We both smelled the maple, but I didn't smell the cigar stuff. But like I said, I have weird allergies, and so some stuff, I mean, I kept smelling soap all day, and you guys weren't smelling the soap that I was smelling, and I know that there's a plant that smells like that, because I've smelled that before.
Yeah, and but, you were smelling that when we were actually out hiking, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't smell the smoke, but you know, you guys, all three of you did. And so I thought, well, you know, it must be there. I have such a bad sense of smell. But then that one area where we hit that maple cookie smell, I mean, that was overwhelming. We kept thinking it was us. And we're like, but as soon as you walked away from that spot, it was gone.
We'd been eating. We thought it was us because we'd been eating maple cookies up in the parking lot. But it was just this one small spot in the snow shed. All of a sudden it smelled really maple-y. And just gone. So we took a cookie and left it there.
Yeah, and then we did the ghost box and we asked them if they liked the cookie, and they said yummy. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. Well, one of the things that happened with the ghost box that was interesting, and I am still fairly skeptical of it, but I did record it and send it, and I think I might have even posted it as the evidence of the week, and if not, I will. But it was the NWPIA were in the snow shed, and they were doing some experiments with laser grids. And the laser grids were starting to sort of get to me just watching them, so we went and sat out on the overlook, Jenny and me and Jim, I think. Was it just
the three of us, Jenny? Just the three of us.
And so as we're sitting there, we started hearing through this in the ghost box voices saying something about light.
Dangerous.
So I asked, what do you think of the lights? And they said, danger. And so what did I say? I said, do you want me to have them turn the lights off?
You asked, you know, do you want me to go tell them to turn off the lights? And we heard, please. And then you said, okay, I'll go tell them to turn off the lights. And then just before you turn off the ghost box, we heard, thank you.
And the thank you was weird. It was like this woman's echoey. It was a really strange, it was not a voice that I'd heard on that ghost box before.
Yeah, it was trippy. I mean, and it did sound, like you said, it did sound different from some of the other things that we were catching. And so, but it was cool to have them tell us, you know, that they thought the lights were dangerous. And then didn't we do another one with Bert and Jamie?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And it was talking about Bert.
Because we didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
He'd gone back up to the truck and we didn't know where he was. And it said he was coming back. That was kind of weird.
Yeah. So you want to go back up, but tell me how things have changed for you. Have they changed for you since you went up to Wellington, as far as, are you less skeptical, more skeptical, the same?
I would say I'm less skeptical about Wellington, but not necessarily less skeptical about other places. You know, like I said, I've experienced it. I've been there. So I can say there's definitely something strange there, but you know, some of the locations that you see on the shows that we have all seen, the Stanley, the Waverly, all those places that are hot spots that we all want to go to. I think until I've actually been there, I don't know how much I actually fully 100% believe for me. Now, I believe that, you know, that Cheryl and Chad and all those guys, I believe they all had experiences there and they heard stuff, and I'm that's great. But for me, I'd actually have to experience it to really break down that skeptic wall.
No, I understand. I understand. So you said you were going to stick around and do the lightning round, right?
Sure.
Okay, and turn on your mic, and Chad and Cheryl are, so we're all going to stick around and do the lightning round. Whoops.
Yeah, can't
wait. Rick just disappeared.
Hey, he totally just vanished.
Rick is gone. It's probably spooky and paranormal.
But I'm still here.
But Teresa's still here.
Teresa's here.
All right. Well, so let's go ahead and get started with the lightning round. Teresa, do you know the rules for the lightning round? I know Jenny listens to it all the time. So
you should brush me up on it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, one or two sentence answers, just real quick answers, and we'll be good. Okay?
Okay.
So, the first question I have, actually, I was thinking of, and I meant to write it down, and I didn't, so none of you have seen it. Sorry. I know somebody who was planning on doing a paranormal television show. And what I hear from people who, paranormal investigators, they always say, well, if I'm going to do a paranormal television show, it's going to be exactly like paranormal investigation really is, because it's not going to be like Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters. I'm going to show how it really is. So what I want to know is, do you guys think that anybody would actually watch that show? What do you think, Jenny?
You know, I was sitting there thinking about that as you said it, and I don't think so, because it would be so boring.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to edit that thing out so much just to get the exciting parts. And I think that's why the shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures work, because they've edited out, and of course they've added stuff in, but to actually sit there and watch somebody investigate would be boring as hell.
Yeah. What do you think, Teresa?
Well, see, I think the investigative method on some of the television shows are pretty funny. So if I wanted to keep to comedy, I would do it just like they do it. Yeah. If I were going to try to do something different, I might show what the tools are that they're using a little bit more thoroughly to describe what they're supposed to do with a little bit more depth than the 10-second description you get every week. Or maybe you could post that somewhere, read this before you watch the television show. But if it was my show, we would laugh a lot.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think, Chad?
Well, if you're really serious about that kind of stuff, it would probably be interesting to you, but most people would get bored of it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Cheryl, what do you think?
Well, I think the issue is time. I think that, and Rick's not here, so he can't kill me, but I think Ghost Hunters does film probably pretty, except for Lights Out, pretty close to what a paranormal investigative team does. The only problem is they only have, 50 minutes for the show. So I don't even see how you can do a show that is true to life as far as paranormal investigation and capture everything in a short time frame.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, of course you can.
Well, I think my understanding of the way they used to do investigations is they wouldn't go lights out. That's a bunch of crap. And I think Ghost Hunters itself has influenced the way, you know, people investigate nowadays. And maybe it's not the right way, but that's the impact they've had.
Yes. Oh, yeah, totally, you're right.
Totally agree.
Yeah, totally you're agree. Right. Okay, so next question. So a 49-year-old grandmother recently, she went to bed with a migraine headache, and when she woke up, she had a French accent. Now, there's an actual syndrome that causes this, and it's known as foreign accent syndrome, and there's a neurological explanation for why it occurs. It has to do with neural pathways being damaged. But still, if you've never had a French accent before, can you wake up with a French accent? Or do you think that this could be something that's coming from some other experience, like past lives or something like that? What do you think, Jenny?
Well, that's a loaded question. You know, I think in your subconscious, if you've ever, you know, watched TV or had any kind of brush up against an accent like that, I think if you had some kind of glitch in your neural system, I think I could see it happening. I mean, I think it would definitely be just like another part of your brain being accessed.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Teresa?
Depends on what type of champagne you were drinking the night before. you know, if you're watching Monty Python and listening to the funny French man, I don't know about that one. That's kind of we should have Melissa here because that seems like it would kind of be like a past life.
Yeah, one wonders, huh?
Kind of like a past life thing that maybe it melded over into your present life.
Could be. What do you think, Chad? Go ahead, Teresa. Sorry.
Maybe you're like Gina Davis in that Long Kiss Goodbye where you're a Russian spy and now you're a soccer mom in Washington State, and
hey,
all of a sudden it comes back out.
I've seen that one.
There's a first.
It's too bad Rick's not here because he would be shocked. Okay, so Chad, what do you think?
Well, how do you think I got my Southern accent? I mean,
Cheryl hit you on the head. You woke up.
No, I'm from the North
Tennessee.
So is that your answer?
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Okay. All right. Cheryl, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's a neurological explanation, I'm sure that's the cause sometimes. I also believe that maybe it could be due to a past life experience.
Hang on, sure. Say goodnight.
That's it.
Okay. That was the Big Wolf saying goodnight, boys and girls.
Goodnight, Big Wolf.
Night-night.
Goodnight, Big Wolf.
So, along the same lines, there are also reports of people who have had past life regressions or even just gone to sleep and awakened with a whole new talent. Like maybe they woke up and could play the piano, and they never could before, or they could all of a sudden paint and they never could before. So why do you think that happens, Jenny?
Man, you know, I don't know if it's something, you know, that's suppressed in their brain maybe, and they just access that part of it, or maybe it is a past right life regression. I don't know. I mean, that's a whole nother world for the skeptic in me.
Yeah. What do you think, Teresa?
So that was run that by me one more time.
Well, there are reports of people who sometimes wake up, for instance, go to bed one way and wake up and they have a whole new talent. Like all of a sudden they can play the piano and they couldn't before. Or some have had past life regressions and then have a brand new talent that they never had before. So I wondered what you thought the explanation for that might be.
Well, maybe some sort of latent activity in the brain. I don't know. I pull a lot of stuff in through osmosis because I have televisions and radios on around me all day long. So
that's true.
Next time I can turn around and I can go, oh, the way to do that is. So, but you know, the whole new, like you can wake up and play the piano to me. That's just,
Yeah. Hey, it'd be awesome to me if I could wake up and sing all of a sudden, because, you know, when I used to sing lullabies to Tanner, he would tell me not to.
Hey,
so.
That'll do it, Mommy.
Yeah.
Daddy, make her stop.
Yeah, no, one time when he was three, I was laying down next to him in bed and singing him a song, and he put his little hand on my cheek, and he had his pacifier in his mouth, and he pulled it out and gave me this loving look and said, "Don't sing, Mommy."
Don't sing, Mom.
I know. Go ahead, Teresa. Sorry.
Voice lessons, Mom. Voice lessons. But
that's
no,
right.
I'm thinking some type of latent activity in the brain that had not been challenged before comes out. And,
good answer.
But now that doesn't say anything for the hours of practice and rehearsal that musicians go through. But you might have more of a knack for it then. So yeah. I don't know, man. I wish I could wake up and play guitar in Wade's band. You know.
Yeah, hey, that'd be awesome. So what do you think, Chad?
Well, I think it's in the same area as, like, you know, you had the people who were like geniuses, just born that way, and it just, I don't know if the brain is, I believe in reincarnation, so I think it's possible, but maybe it's something to do with the brain, you know?
Yeah.
Just the way it functions.
Cheryl?
I'm just going to go back to what I said on your last question. I think anything is possible, including tapping into past lives.
Okay, cool. Well, along the lines of talents, I have really good news for you guys, especially you Trekkies. There has been the world's first opera that was performed entirely in Klingon. It's being performed now in the Netherlands. So I think that actually knowing how to write and speak Klingon is an amazingly unusual talent. And what I want to know is if you guys have any strange or odd talents that people might be surprised by. Jenny?
Oh, you'd have to ask Gavin on that one. I don't think I have any strange talents that I know of.
All right. How about you, Teresa?
I can read in Elvish, sort of, because I've read Tolkien for so many years.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I don't read it fluently, of course, but, you know, I've read the trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, like 19 times, so... That's, you know, like I said, I couldn't pull it out in a general conversation, but now I can read it and understand it when I go through the book.
Oh, there you go. So what about you, Chad? Do you have any unusual talents?
Oh, no, that's Cheryl.
Cheryl, does Chad have any unusual talent?
He can ghost hunt in the dark.
I can do just about anything I put my mind to.
He can snore without sucking his own head down his throat.
Well, I do snore, so.
Yeah. Oh, see, there you go. That's a good talent. And how about you, Cheryl? Do you have an odd talent?
I have no strange talents, and I'm sticking to that story.
So she quite clearly does. So would you like to hear my odd and unusual talent? I haven't done it for years. It used to be my college party trick. You could blind me and give me an M&M, and I could tell you by taste what color it was.
Oh, sure.
I haven't done it in years, though, because it has to do with the red dye content that they use in the candy shell. Red dye is bitter. Yeah, and they changed it. But red dye is bitter. And so the more red dye it had, the more bitter it would be. The dark brown were the most bitter. And so that was my strange talent. So in Darwin Award news, actually it's a near Darwin Award, the man lived, but he suffered severe burns trying to kill a spider behind his bathroom toilet. I'm sorry that Rick...
This wasn't Steve Gonzalez, was it?
No, I'm sorry that Rick isn't here for this, because Rick hates spiders. But what happened is he sprayed an aerosol can at the spider, and then his light bulb blew out in the bathroom. So he wanted to see what it was, and he flicked his lighter to see if he'd killed the spider. And the rest, as they say, is history. He suffered pretty bad burns. No report about whether the spider lived or died. But here's what I want to know.
Residual hairspray caught on fire?
That's right. How far would you go to kill or avoid whatever it is that creeps you out? Jenny?
Oh, my Lord. I would just scream, dude, run. I mean, I'm Spiders, I don't like spiders, but I've been known to kill them on occasion. I really, really don't like snakes at all.
Oh, me either. No.
So I would probably turn tail and run. I would, you know, whoever else was with me would get the big stick to do that, because I could not. No thanks.
How about you, Teresa?
Well, I've got her on the snakes because I had a snake crawl up in my bed one night.
Oh, my God. I think I just got gray hair thinking about it.
That's the same response I always get. It was a black snake. We had mice in the house, so the black snake came through wherever the mice came through to catch the black or to catch the mice. So, but I had turned my TV to a very low volume and set it to go off in like 30 minutes. Laid down to go to sleep, opened my eyes and caught a slithering motion over the edge of the bed. Rolled off the other side of the bed, flipped the light on, and went, "Yes, it is a snake in my bed." So, of course, I walked down the room or down the hall to my mother's room and go, "This is going to be fun. There's a snake in my bed." So we eventually wrangled him to the front door. And instead of going out the front door, he went between the storm door and the door frame, at which point my mother said, "Shut the door." And I was like, "Well, he's stuck. I don't want to shut the door." So we shut the door on him, and my mother proceeded to go outside and chop his head off. It's what her people used to do. And it was a lovely evening. So after that, I don't think I'm going to be afraid of snakes anymore.
Yeah, good Lord, I still am. So, Chad and Cheryl, we got to be real quick because we just have another couple of minutes. What about you, Chad?
I hate bees. And, I hate them. Whatever I can do to avoid them.
And, Cheryl, if the zombies were coming after you, what would you do?
Run really fast.
Okay, well, there you go. So, next week on the show, we'll be talking to Michelle Pillow, and I'm sorry, tell me Michelle's the other person, Cheryl. It's slipped my mind.
We're going to be talking to Michelle Pillow and Mandy Roth,
and they're going to be talking about their writing about the paranormal and their experiences with the paranormal. So that promises to be good. And anything else we need to know?
Yeah, if Cheryl, if you're going to run really fast from zombies, take something sharp with you.
Are you trying to say they're going to catch up to me?
Yeah, take something sharp with you and you'll always be good.
Cool.
That's right. Okay, guys. So thank you, Jenny and Teresa. And thank you to Michelle Pillow, too. Yes, and I don't know what happened to Rick, but he probably had a thunderstorm or something. And usually he calls us back when he disappears like that. He didn't. So we'll see you all next week. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
I want to do lots of these.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.